Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Fausta's Blog Talk Radio Show. Today we're waiting for Eneas Biglion of Acer to call in, but in the meantime, we also have Siggy. Good morning, Siggy.
Buenos días, Fausta.
Buenos días. Buenos
días. El jefe is on the phone.
Yes, so we're here. And I also would like to ask all my listeners who are listening to either live or the podcast to go and vote for my podcast, which has been nominated in the Best of Blogs as Best Podcast. So if everybody could go in, it is at bestofblogs.com under the Best Podcast Video Blog. So if you all could go there and vote. I'm sure Siggy already voted.
Oh, absolutely. Four or
everybody.
Five times.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Vote often.
Well, early vote often, yes. I'm of the, I learned that from Obama. That's his school, the Cook County Democrat School of Politics. Vote early, vote often.
Mm-hmm. And then we I have been running around all morning. I am lagging behind on everything that has to do on politics on the or the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But the big news in South America was that the number one guy from the FARC is now officially dead, which is good news.
Yes, well, you know, did you hear the music that accompanied the news?
What was that?
It's from the Wizard of Oz. Ding dong, the witch is dead.
Actually, there
he was a real piece of work. I mean, he was a real piece of work, this guy.
Yes.
They said he died of a heart attack, and yeah. I absolutely believe that. I think he was looking up, and he saw 500 pounds of metal coming his way, and he probably did die of a heart attack.
if that doesn't make you die of a heart attack, nothing will make you die of a
That's
heart
right.
attack.
Right.
So, but for a long time, there had been rumors that he was dead. I mean, it's almost like a Castro kind of scenario. This guy, there had been for at least 3 years that I know of rumors that he was dead because he was pretty old. And who knows? Maybe it's the same thing as Castro, but now officially the FARC itself has said that he is dead, so that's a very good thing.
Well, Castro keeps dying or is on death's doorstep, but no one's dropping bombs on him.
Not yet.
You know, I would be more impressed with his nine lives if there were bombs falling. this guy was not so. Like I said, I am quite sure he had a heart attack. I am quite sure he looked up and saw heavy metal raining down.
That's
and,
right.
Conked out. But, I mean, the truth is, couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Oh, worst one. Actually, Time magazine had an article calling him Rebel Patriarch. I was furious when I saw that. And the article was accompanied by a picture of him holding his hands up in prayer, which I hope he did at his last moment. But it's obscene how the media portrays this kind of criminal.
No, I don't think it's obscene. I think it's perfectly – I don't even think they understand. I mean, you know what? I don't even think they understand what it is they're doing. They don't understand that who Che Guevara really is. They don't understand who Castro really is. I mean, they have no idea. I mean Che actually has more blood on his hands than Yasser Arafat, in the sense that of who he personally killed. I mean, Che had no objection to picking up a gun and shooting women and children by his own admission.
That's right.
You know, of course, Arafat was responsible for the death of probably a couple of million people, all said and done, but, you know, in a more roundabout way. But the media has no, they don't know who these people are.
Well, I mean, just over the weekend, Benicio del Toro got the Best Actor Award at Cannes for his Che, for acting as the Che.
Yeah, but again, you know, look, you're talking about actors and actresses. I mean, it's not as if they have gravitas. It's not as if they are anything mean. I mean, Sean Penn is now regarded. I mean, an idiot like Sean Penn is now regarded as someone, you know, who's credible. I mean, it just says it all. You know, if actor, you know, thank goodness actors and actresses are really of little consequence.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they were of consequence, then we wouldn't even remember the name Shakespeare.
Well, that's true.
You know, I mean, you're talking about, you know, you're talking about self-important people, self-aggrandizing people, and they're irrelevant. I mean, you know, and they know they're irrelevant. I mean, all I have to do, listen, if I asked you who won the Academy Award 10 years ago, 1998, you wouldn't remember.
I have no idea.
Right, but you know, but you have no problem remembering, you know, Shakespeare or Tennessee Williams, you know, who wrote 50 years, you know, Shakespeare wrote hundreds of years ago, and Tennessee Williams 50 years ago. So, I mean, they're irrelevant. You know what they are? They're like playing house. These are like
playing house the game or playing
only I can play house the doctor.
All right.
I am house. But the point is, the point is that they're like little children playing house, that somehow they're pretending to be adults. And if they pour pretend tea into pretend teacups, and if they can have pretend conversations with imaginary friends, that somehow that this is real, you know. But they're not relevant. I mean, you know, come on. You know, I mean, this is we live in a world that today that celebrates movie stars more than they celebrate scientists or doctors or, you know, or astronauts. I mean, it's just absurd.
Yes, and I think we have a caller here. Hello, caller. Is this an ask?
Yes. Hey, how are you?
Anas, how are you? Wonderful having you here. Have you ever met Siggy yet?
No, not really.
Well, here's your big opportunity. What can I say? You've just won the lottery. You've just won Faustus podcast lottery. Actually, I have been a big fan of yours.
Oh, thank you.
I am on your mailing list, and I religiously read your weekly, mass mailings.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's you do a tremendous amount of work. I don't think just if anybody's listening, they ought to know that the amount of work that goes into the research and you know, just a tremendous amount of work. And I submit that everybody, you know, Fausta, you need to put up the email address
now,
because everybody ought to subscribe to this, because while most of us are used to focusing on the Northern Hemisphere and Europe and the Middle East and all that stuff, the truth is, in the 21st century, there's going to be a huge North-South shift, and we need to be aware of what's going on in the Southern Hemisphere.
And I think I came to Sid from Siggy sending me the link.
Yes, you did, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there you have it. So tell us about Aserines.
Well, Aserines is a 501c3 based in Washington, D.C., and our mission is to, you know, teach ideas of, you know, free market ideas, free enterprise ideas, and also, it's important for us that the United States sort of learn about Latin America, and that Latin America learn about the American interest in the region, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have like different programs. One of the programs is the one you were talking about, the weekly news report, where we have like a certain amount of columnists from Latin American countries, mostly people related to think tanks, you know, other nonprofits in Latin America, that send us articles, opinion articles about, you know, local affairs, things that are going on in those countries. And also we pick the better columnists from, for example, the Financial Times or other, you know, newspapers from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
we reproduce that there. We send it to, right now it's over 21,000 people that are subscribed. We send like at least one email a week. And then the traffic is good traffic. We have like almost 350,000 hits a month.
Great.
And it's growing really, really fast, especially during the election times. You know, we noticed it grows really, really fast. And we also have a program related to immigration reform. We have like a partnership with the Vernon K. Kribo Foundation of Colorado. And there our proposal is about like a non-immigrant work program, you know, like a temporary work permit that can be renewed, you know, and that will include undocumented, you know, workers, currently
mm-hmm.
undocumented workers. We have the Juan Bautista Laverde Award. That is an award for writers. The people that apply can submit their articles or books or academic papers that are written in Spanish or English related to the Hispanic community in the United States or Latin America, mostly related to, you know, policy issues. And we have the Policy Experts Guide, what we call PLAPEG, Latin American Public Policy Experts Guide, where media, for example, can use whenever they want to find like a certain expert, you know, from a specific country. Like, for example, you're going to find someone from Panama
mm-hmm.
who has experience working on dollarization. You just get there, right? So you check out the country, and then you find whatever issue you want the experts to be specializing. And the last program we have is this relationship with the Institute of the Mexicans Abroad that depends on the Mexican government. And we work on everything related, you know, to the relationship between the United States and Mexico, you know, everything like immigration, reform, Mexican voting outside of Mexico, or remittances, stuff like that.
It seems to me, though, I want to reemphasize this. I think what you're doing is important because I think in the 21st century, Latin America will start to come into its own. You know, for the last century, they have really suffered under delusions of populism, and I think that you're starting to see now. You know, I mean, for whatever reason, it seems South America is always attracted. There are a lot of people in South America that are always attracted to this populist notion of the strong leader, the macho leader, we'll take care of you cradle to grave. But there seems to be a groundswell of people who reject that notion. And I think that when you finally see a middle class emerge, when you finally see less corruption and more economic viability, I think the relations between the North and Southern Hemisphere are going to change enormously. You know, and I think that that's something that we in the Northern Hemisphere have to be aware of.
Yeah, like when I first came to the United States, it was in 1999, I was an intern at this foundation in New York. the Foundation for Economic Education,
mm-hmm.
and we were studying basically Austrian economics, and I was telling the American interns that I was reading Mises and Hayek back in college in Argentina, and they couldn't believe it. They were like, "Really? I mean, where did you get those ideas from?" And then recently, last year, we had an intern from Guatemala, from one of the most free market universities, this Francisco Marroquín University
mm-hmm.
from Guatemala City, and she came, she studied Hayek, Mises, and everything back in her country, and then she gets to take these classes at Georgetown University, and she asked this question to the professor, her economics professor, and she mentions the Austrian economic perspective and stuff, and then the professor here says something like, "Oh, and I didn't hear from that for a long time, that we don't even study that anymore."
Hmm.
So things are kind of changing sometimes, you know. Well, I'm not trying to say that Georgetown have like the right or the wrong ideas. Maybe it's just
mm-hmm.
one professor, right? I'm sure they have like different professors with different perspectives right there. But it's weird sometimes how it works. And in that sense, I think exchanging people, sending people that are from Latin America to the United States to work or have like a study experience is really useful. You know, the way Americans can see how Latinos are, and the way, you know, Latinos can sort of learn and maybe pick up the better institutions of the United States, you know?
Right. I mean, that's probably the shortest distance between two points. You know, Americans, and especially in universities, especially via the media, have a certain romanticized vision of what Latin America is and the problems that face and why there are problems. And they don't really know. They've never been there. And I don't think they understand, you know, the magnitude to how Latin America has suffered under these populists, under these tyrants. I mean, the amount of corruption is almost beyond belief.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
yeah. And it's important, this romantic image that media creates sometimes of these heroes of revolution or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of readers of our news report that email us from time to time. And there's this Colombian reader, and she was saying something like, I really like what you do. I like that you spread the word about FARC and how terrible they are and everything. And then we were emailing each other a couple of times, and she understood how evil terrorism was for Colombia, how evil FARC were. And the exchange of ideas was beyond the proposal of FARC, because we knew that with those means, it wasn't really important what the proposal was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly she mentions Che Guevara from Argentina, and she said something like, that is totally different concept. That is like a hero and someone really, really to think like a higher person.
Yeah,
like
you know,
Lord.
We were just talking about that before you came on the air. It is unbelievable how many people look at Che Guevara as a hero.
Yeah.
This is a guy who picked up a gun and shot women and children himself.
Exactly.
Well,
yeah.
This is...
Hundreds of them.
Hundreds of them.
Yeah, by himself. That's not saying how many he had killed. But this is a guy who did it himself, and they give him this credibility as if he were some kind of a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Why is that, Inez? I mean, is it that there's this mythology that some people can't let go of, or are they crazy, or what's the matter?
It's,
I mean,
just the idea, the concept is perfect. It's this rich guy that left everything behind to devote his time and his whole life for...
Yeah, kind of like St. Francis of Assisi, you know.
Exactly, yeah. It sounds great. I mean, the concept is amazing. It's perfect.
Right, but you know, but it's very interesting. You never see the leaders come from the peasants. You never see the leaders come from the poorer class.
Yeah.
You know, you would never... I mean, let's take a look at that Che, and, you know, and let's take a look at Trujillo. This is a guy who assassinated politicians.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who underwrote mass abductions of people, right? He abducted lots of people. This is a guy, these are people, Che and guys like him, recruited child soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, peasants, people who, you just, they would never do something like this. I mean, they wouldn't organize something like this. It's always somebody from the upper classes, from the higher classes, who comes in and convinces them that your morality is wrong, and
yeah,
you have to do these things.
And that it's right to go out and do these horrible stuff for the sake of the revolution. It is amazing to me.
Yeah, I mean, take a look at the FARC. These are people who attacked ambulances. They displaced civilians. They
were
had,
ready to take over the country. I mean, how
right.
much was...
Phony trials. I mean,
yes.
you know,
how
all
much,
these things.
How much of Colombia was under the FARC control, say, 10 years ago? Inez.
10 years ago?
Yeah, 5-10 years ago.
Well, I don't have the exact figure of guerrilla members. I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a lot of people, certainly. I mean, just the people that quit FARC this year was like 1,300 people.
Wow.
Just in 2008. So I'm not sure about 10 years ago. Yeah, yeah. What is certain is that they are quitting, you know, every day a little more. And because now they are scared. It's interesting, this interview of the Minister of Defense of Colombia,
mm-hmm.
where he's telling the whole story about Marulanda and the way people are quitting. And he sort of related with the story about Karina, the,
mm-hmm.
this leader that quit like 3-4 days ago. And it's interesting because FARC are getting not only disarmed, but also they are losing confidence in their mission. They are losing confidence in their future, right?
Which has to be annoying to the left. I mean, more than annoying, because they've been supporting FARC.
Sure. Yes.
You know,
yes.
And all of a sudden they're saying, the FARC people are just saying, maybe this isn't such a good idea anymore.
Yeah, and it wasn't just a matter of advocacy. It was like supporting with money and
right.
weapons. Yeah, yeah. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, all the Raul Reyes laptop information tells, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it is really important what's going on right now in Colombia. It's really important because it really contributes to stopping all this craziness of the 21st century socialism. And that is really affecting a lot of countries. Like, for example, I think this year is the 80th anniversary of the Che Guevara, and they are building up monuments, you know, like memorials devoted to Guevara around Argentina. I am from Rosario City, the same city that Guevara was from.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this monument there. And like a month ago, we went for this conference, and it was unbelievable. We brought Aznar, we brought former president of Mexico, Vicente Fox. We had a lot of free market friends, a lot of you know, former politicians, think tank leaders. Well, like 2,000 people from different countries,
mm-hmm.
and the government himself, using taxpayers' money, Argentine taxpayers' money, put together this huge concert against people sent, you know, by President Bush. So we were supposed to be sent by President Bush to bring like free market ideas and stuff like that to Argentina, and I was traveling. I was going to Argentina first, then Chile, then Paraguay, and finally Bolivia. And the only country I had problems was in Argentina. They were following us for like 3 or 4 blocks, and they were like children almost. They were like 16, 17 years old people,
mm-hmm.
insulting us and saying that we were like capitalist pigs and why don't we go back to the United States. And it's funny because I am from there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from Rosario City. And the situation that this 21st century socialism is creating, it's something that cannot be sustained, you know? And you can see a lot of aggression in Bolivia, you know, all these confrontations, all these violent protesters in the streets. And you can see all the problem between the people, you know, related to the agro in Argentina and government right now. I don't know if you saw the news about Argentina. There was like this manifestation, this protest in Rosario City,
mm-hmm.
with like 300,000 people that were basically saying, we reject government taxes on the agricultural products.
Yeah, let's explain to the listeners what's going on in there. The government is now adding a tax to the farmers. Now, Argentina's economy has a tremendous farming industry, and this is going to be very bad, not only for exports, but also internally, because it's going to create food shortages, the farmers have gone on strike, and so on. So where is that now?
They've been discussing this for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
They started with all this protest, you know, like at least in, what was that, March, I think, right? At the end
mm-hmm.
of March.
Yes.
And
right.
the government has been sort of promising that they will not get this really, really high rate that they say, like, actually is like something like 75% or something like that. in a country where 80% of exports are related to primary products.
Mm-hmm.
And government has been not really respectful, like talking about the soybean, like if it's not something important. They haven't been really respectful of the job of all this amount of people devoted to this activity. And suddenly they come up and they say, okay, we will apply this really, really high rate. And people say, no way, you know, that makes no sense at all. Because they already been increasing taxes on that for a long time, since they started in 2003.
Yes.
And then they say, okay, let's negotiate, let's talk. Maybe we can have a different agreement, something in between or something more flexible. And then government says, okay, yeah, let's talk, whatever. And then they have like a couple of meetings and they will not really, they are not really flexible about anything at all. And then 25th of May came, that was this weekend, there's an important date there because it's related to the Mayo Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And then this producer say, okay, let's get together in Rosario City where the flag memorial is, and we will protest against government, against Cristina Kirchner government. And in a moment where the support of Cristina Kirchner is sort of around 30%, right?
Mm-hmm.
While her husband had something else, it was like 70 something.
Wow.
Percent. And then all newspapers that they used to be sort of supportive of the government, supportive of the Kirchner dynasty, to put it in a way, they suddenly change and they go against the government, and they start saying, okay, this makes no sense because, you know, Argentina is not really safe anymore. Investments are going to other countries, and we are creating a lot of signals that we are not friendly, you know, to investors, and now we are creating a problem to the Argentine people.
You know, I have to interrupt you for a minute because it's very interesting here. You know, we're talking about Argentina, we're talking about Venezuela and Colombia as if these were issues in a vacuum, but they're really not. I mean, this is the Arabization of South American politics.
Yeah.
In what sense?
In the sense that, I mean, it's no coincidence that Hugo Chavez is attaching himself to the Iranians, or not so much even to the Iranians, but to Hamas, to Hezbollah, because when he does that, he gets to say we're victims too. You know, in other words, the people are so brainwashed into believing that the Arab world has been victimized,
mm-hmm.
and you get strong-arm dictators like there are in South America, although there's still some that are, you know, certainly rejecting that. They want to look for a way out of their problems, and this
mm-hmm.
is the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you have countries, like I said, like Venezuela, who are throwing their lot in with the Arab world, which is, I mean, if there was ever a monument to human failure, to human cultural and societal failure, it's the Arab world.
Well, and they're throwing, at the same time, Venezuela is throwing a heck of a lot of money into Argentinian politics, like that.
Right, and it's all one long string. And it's all one long string. And it just surprises me sometimes that in Latin America, they don't understand that this is not going to elevate their cause. This is going to sink them. I mean,
yeah.
Why would you attach yourself, as I said, to the greatest monument to cultural, political, and social failure in the history of the world?
It's important to remember that Cristina and Néstor Kirchner are former Montoneros, that is
right.
Former terrorists during the 70s in Argentina.
Yeah.
I understand that.
So,
but
you know,
but I want to say something to you. Look, Ineos, mm-hmm. the fact is this. You know, there is such a thing as a backward society, and there's such a thing as a failed society. Okay? In the Arab world, what you have is very clearly a failed society. A failed society is a culture, is a society that knows better, that has seen better, but chooses to fail instead.
Mm-hmm.
A backward society is a society or culture that has never really had the opportunity to express itself. You know, you go to the deepest, darkest of the Amazon, and you have people that are in dugout canoes. It's not because they're backward. They've never had exposure to or the opportunity, if you will, to progress. And unfortunately, in Latin America, you know, you have a melange. You have a thing of both. You have both backward societies and failed societies. But overall, most South Americans have never really had a chance to express themselves.
Yeah.
They've never really had the opportunity. They've always been stepped on, kicked on, you know, and no one has ever said, here's the way out. Whereas in the Middle East, you know, it's with the Palestinians. All you have to do, I mean, you know, peace in the Middle East is very simple. It's very simple. They've been talking about it since 1948. Cessation of hostility, secure borders, diplomatic recognition. That's it.
Yeah.
You know,
well, in Latin America, right now, there are people like Hernando de Soto, mm-hmm. who is actually working on real projects that involve property rights. And I agree with him that property rights would be one of the ways for Latin American in economies in general to dig themselves out of the hole. But how much of that is going on in general, Ineas? What do you think? Because you travel to all these places.
Well, one of the countries I visited in this last tour was Chile. And
mm-hmm.
I've been in Chile for the first time in like 2000, 2001, and then
mm-hmm.
came back in 2008. And the difference is huge, you know? You can see they're like building skyscrapers and they're having like a lot of traffic with a lot of cars.
Yeah, they're booming.
Things. Exactly. It's, there's prosperity everywhere. You know, there's people going out and spending money. And everything is going on, even when Bachelet government haven't been really, really supportive of that. I mean, they've been involved in a lot of corruption scandals, a lot of problems like the Tren Santiago thing, you know, creating problems in the transportation system in Santiago. And stuff like that. So, and then you see also, for example, the what's going on in Peru, right? With Alan Garcia, that is like of course, he considers himself sort of like a left-wing politician. But
right.
if you the contrast between the first government and right now is huge. And right now he embraced the idea of free trade, following a little bit of what Toledo started, and now that they are really strong with forces and things against terrorism, for example, they detained all these FARC members that were in Lima, sort of trying to get connected with the former Shining Path, you know, Sendero Luminoso. They are doing really good right now, and Peru also is changing really fast. One country I really have some reserves, but basically it's because of the nature of the president, is Brazil. Because at the same time that Brazil is doing pretty good from the economic perspective, the political relation of Lula da Silva with the Foro de Sao Paulo.
Mm-hmm.
And Hugo Chavez sometimes is kind of blurry, right?
But will the Brazilians tolerate a failed economy? Will the Brazilians tolerate a system that will basically knock down everything they've built? I don't think so.
No. They will not. Of course.
Right. I agree. I don't think so.
Now, explain to them about the Foro de San Pablo. Here in the U.S., nobody hears about it. In South America, it is talked about constantly. So tell us about the Foro.
Yeah, the Foro de San Pablo has like all the communist and what they call like social democracy political parties of Latin America. And it includes several groups such as FARC and different guerrilla groups in the region, and they got together in Brazil. They are related to the Partido de Trabajadores, that
mm-hmm.
is something like the Workers' Party, where Lula comes from, and of course it's sort of inspired in the in this romantic idea of Cuba, like having Cuba as a model of what they're going towards. And together with Hugo Chavez, with Venezuelan taxpayers' money, they are pushing all this agenda that is sort of related to get rid of Álvaro Uribe in Colombia, and all governments that sort of oppose their main ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a really important institution at the time of seeing all these links that we see between, for example, Rafael Correa in Ecuador and Hugo Chavez in Venezuela and Luis Reyes, right? As we see in all the report all the information are is found in the laptops, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, the FARC laptops.
Yeah.
You know, I also don't think. I mean, you know, we sit. Americans sit. You know, we sit here in the North and we look at the goings on in Latin America as if this was, you know, the same kind of political back and forth that's going on in San Antonio, Texas. and I, you know, with the Mexicans and Mexican Americans and the illegal immigration and so on. And I don't think people understand the ramifications of. I don't think they understand the ramifications of a entire continent that implodes. What ramifications though that will have on North America and on the world for that matter? I mean, Venezuela is a huge oil producer. There's oil, you know, offshore probably around the whole bloody continent. And I don't think people realize that if we don't pay attention to what's going on down there, and if we don't offer the people opportunities to participate in this wealth, you know, that we have established for ourselves, I think we're going to pay the price. And that's why I think Congress has done a terrible thing when they turned down Colombia for the free trade agreement.
Oh, that
I mean,
was
that's
horrible.
That was a debacle. That was horrible. And I don't know how Congress can ever redeem themselves. I don't know how the Democrats can ever redeem themselves, because if I were in South America and I looked at a Democrat, and I would say, who the hell are you?
Yeah, but sometimes Democrats, I think they assume the world hate Republicans or hate President Bush.
Right.
But the truth is that a lot of the times, a lot of people around the world hate the United States. It doesn't matter who is running the country.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly.
And they do not understand that. They think
no.
It's just a matter of Republicans. I mean, or I don't know if they think that, but that's the way they want to portray it, right?
They want to believe that.
Yeah, yeah.
The truth is they desperately want to believe that.
Yeah.
They desperately want to believe that.
And they think that if
the American government turns more left and more left and more left, they'll be accepted. But nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah, when you check out, for example, Bolivia, and you see that in La Paz, they have the biggest embassy they have right now in La Paz is the embassy of Iran, with like over 20 officials from Iran.
Wow.
Something is going on there, right?
Yeah.
What do they want something that big right there? I mean, what for?
Well, you've got, I mean, Fausto, you've written about the Golden Triangle. Why don't you talk about that?
The
drugs.
With Hezbollah.
The drugs of Hezbollah in Latin America, yeah. I mean, they've made real, I mean, Hezbollah, for example, I mean, they've made real, and Hezbollah, of course, is nothing but the proxy for Iran, but they've made some real inroads into the goal, into South America.
Well, I had a copy of this Hezbollah Quran that they were distributing among the military in Venezuela, for example.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because I studied a little bit of Islam and everything, and whenever you study Quran and Islam, you see that it is not possible. I mean, a good Muslim do not really accept like a translation of Quran to any other language.
Right.
Not even to like modern Arabic, right?
Right.
And sometimes people see it like, oh, that's really nice because Hugo Chavez is giving some faith or some religious belief to this military people. And sometimes, even assuming that Quran have great intentions and stuff like that, and this is so romantic. This is like what we said before. It is not. It doesn't go with with good Islam behavior, good Islam practice, to read Quran in another language. So how can you have like a Spanish version of that? You know?
Right.
Well, you can't. I mean, clearly you can't.
Yeah, you cannot.
And
it's just part of a brainwash. It's just
no, but I mean, but when you talk about, you know, when you're talking to us about the Iranian embassy in La Paz,
mm-hmm.
this should come really as no surprise, but more of a wake up call.
Yeah.
Iranian influence in South America is big,
mm-hmm.
and it's real.
Yeah, and it's a huge concern for all the Israel families that live in Latin America. For example, in Venezuela, there's like a pretty big community of Jews.
Yeah.
And they are really concerned. When you check out, for example, in different groups, like, for example, the Primera Justicia people group in Facebook, you see all last names that are Jew. And,
right.
And they are really, really concerned about what's going on right there.
Well,
yeah.
They have what to be concerned about. I mean, they blew up,
yeah.
Iran blew up the Jewish community center.
Well, you remember what happened in Argentina?
That's what I'm talking about. They blew up the Jewish community center in Argentina,
mm-hmm.
and
the embassy first. You remember?
And the embassy water, first, right?
But they did twice. Yeah.
Right. I mean, Iran is playing a role. I mean, you could listen. The argument that Iran or Hezbollah is blowing up the Argentina, you know, that's just a side issue, and it probably is true. But the fact is that there's an enormous Iranian influence in South America. There's an enormous amount of Hezbollah drug dealing there, and that affects us here. That affects money that's being brought into the Middle East. This has to be addressed.
And
yeah.
Chavez, I don't know if the people listening to the podcast realize this, has opened direct flights from Syria and Tehran into Venezuela.
Mm-hmm. And I read this interview to the people that work for those airlines, and they said something like, you can hear these people talking, like, you know, in Farsi. And it's funny because they don't even speak Spanish, but they all have Venezuelan passports.
Yes.
That is a problem, you know.
That is a huge problem.
Right, that's a whole other issue.
Because you can move around the world pretending you are something you're not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also that happened with FARC members, right? They were captured in different countries, and they were also holding actual Venezuelan passports.
Yes.
They were not fake. They were issued by Venezuelan government.
Right. I mean, these are not counterfeit passports.
Exactly.
These are official
yeah.
Venezuelan passports, as legitimate mm-hmm. as anybody can have.
Yeah, yeah. So it's unbelievable. Yeah. The other thing is that Iran is getting a lot of radioactive minerals from South America. Like,
yeah, that's which is a whole other issue. I mean, it's when you take it all together,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you take all these things and you put them together, what you're finding, what you're going to see, is not just circumstantial evidence, but you're going to see hard evidence that Iran is working very hard against not just American interests, but against the interests of the entire free world. I mean, they're looking to blackmail. They're effectively looking to blackmail the West. That's what they're doing. I mean, listen, this is not, and they have good reason to do that. You know, they understand that when a Westerner sees a terrorist hiding behind children, they understand that the Westerners are not going to shoot the children.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They understand this, and that's why they do it.
Yes. Yes.
But the fact of the matter is, and right now, Iran is in a position where they're doing just that. They know that we're not going to get involved in foreign adventures, so they can come into South America, and they can cause all kinds of problems. But you see, and they'll give you a story, and the Hugo Chavez's will give you a story, and they'll talk about poverty, and they'll talk about corrupt politics, and all these things. But the fact of the matter is when you get involved in terror, and when you sponsor terror, and when you underwrite terror and support terror, okay, you're immoral.
Exactly.
Yes, you can. There can be problems that are related. You know, you can talk about poverty, absolutely. You can talk about corrupt politics having an influence and influencing not just people but a society. But when it's all said and done, when you turn to terror and you target innocent people and you target entire communities and cultures and societies, that's because you're immoral. That's the bottom line here.
I agree, yeah. Exactly.
And you know, again, this is not, we're not talking about, you know, the Boston versus Houston rivalry. You know, there's better seafood is better than Texas steak, or you know, the radio stations in Boston are way funnier than the radio stations in Houston. This is not that kind of rivalry. You know, this is, they're trying to undermine something here. And for the Iranians to come in, it's not as if they care about the South. They don't even care about their own people. You think they care about the South Americans? So they will come in and they will use South America and they will use the South Americans to the best advantage they can, all to undermine our way of life. I mean, it's really that simple.
Now, Inez, what reactions are you seeing in, for instance, in Bolivia and Venezuela? I mean, I know that the Venezuelans are not going to be embracing an Iranian mullah lifestyle. I mean, absolutely not. But the damage that a few crazies, not to use a different word, can do is huge. So how are, you know, like in Bolivia, there is the secessionist movement in Santa Cruz. In Venezuela, the opposition is totally fragmented. What kind of reaction are people having?
People are starting to realize this is not sustainable. This 21st century socialism is not working. I mean, for example, Venezuelans see a lot of money getting out of Venezuela than devoted to sort of change things like election results and stuff like that in other countries, right? And at the same time, they cannot find bread or milk or anything like that, like they used to be able to find easily everywhere. They know they have a lot of oil and that Venezuela can really be a really prosperous country. You know, at the same time, they lack a lot of things, right? Like, for example, crime rates are skyrocketing in Caracas or the main cities, like the Zulia state and stuff like that in Venezuela. So people are sort of reacting because they are not getting what they expected. This 21st century socialism, even when have like a new name again, they sort of got another name once more, is socialism, just like that, plain and simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is failing to provide results. It is not working. People expect to government to provide safe streets, but at the same time they have to pay like a private company to take care, you know, like a guard, you know, to stay.
Yes, you have to have a bodyguard.
Yeah, you have to have like a bodyguard or someone that is staying at the front door of your building with a gun or something like that. People pay their taxes, you know, for like public education. At the same time, if they want their children to have a future, they have to also pay the private university to send them.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with you know, medical care. Same thing with retirement care. It is not working. Simple like that. You know.
Well, you know what? It's like I always like to say, you can put an ape in a tuxedo, and you can teach the ape to dance, and you can teach the ape to use a knife and a fork. But in the end, the only one who really believes that the tuxedo is camouflage is the ape. Socialism doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And there's no way you can make it work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can dress it up all you want. You know, you can give it all kinds of put it in a beautiful tuxedo. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my biggest concerns is about America's future, you know, with the coming elections.
Yeah.
Democrats are only, their only proposal in every single issue is like, let's raise taxes. Raise taxes. And it's exactly like that. I mean, how we got into that situation is really, I know it's kind of complex to explain, but how the U.S. got in this situation, you know? Because when you hear Obama's speech, it's totally empty. There's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
It's about change. It's about
it's because they're on the defensive. Ever since the wall came down,
mm-hmm.
The first elections were in Poland and in Czechoslovakia. You know, even before they went their two ways. You know, the Slovakia and the Czech Republic. The left came to realize immediately that when given a choice, people are not going to choose tyranny. They will not choose a communist system. They will not choose a socialist. They want freedom.
Mm.
And they are, and to this day, it is my belief that they are still very, very bitter. The left is very, very bitter. Because there is not a single example anywhere of a socialist or communist regime or ideological political entity that has succeeded. They've all failed. Every single one. There's not a single example.
Yeah.
They're desperate. So what you have here is the left is all they can do. They can't point to any success. You know, you said, well, give us some plans, some projects for change. They don't have any because there aren't any.
Now, on Brazil, on the one hand, you have Lula and the party that essentially brought him to power, which has backed him for decades, embracing the Foro de Sao Paulo. At the same time, Lula is continuing a lot of the free market economy changes that the prior administration had implemented, and he's working with people like José Steinmann, which is a big believer in free market economics. You know, he was a student of Milton Friedman and so on. So what is the trend, say, in Brazil in particular? I mean, which one is going to win out, do you think?
I think that they're doing good, and they will keep doing good for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because Lula, even with his personal agenda, that is contrary to these free market ideas.
Mm-hmm.
He understands that if he changes any important variable of the economic system in Brazil,
mm-hmm.
everything will fall apart.
Mm.
And he knows this way he will have support. Like for example, if you see the cover of Veja, I don't know how you pronounce that in Portuguese, Veja or Veja magazine. It's one of the most popular magazines there. They are talking about like a new middle class that is going really prosper in Brazil, and they're starting to buy like more expensive cell phones, better cars, and
mm-hmm.
having nicer house and stuff like that. What is really really positive for Brazil. But at the same time, Lula comes talk to media and says something like Hugo Chavez is the best president Venezuela ever had. Something like that he says, I think it was like a week ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right before the Foro de Sao Paulo meeting started. And I know, it's not really compatible. You have a Bachelet, for example, singing for the funeral of this Marxist, I don't remember the name. He died like 4 or 5 months ago. She was singing the anthem of the Primera Internacional Comunista, the communist.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Yeah, she was singing that.
Yeah,
but
you know what?
TV.
You know what?
Yeah.
A lot of that is like the China plan. You know, they like to talk a good story, and they like to prop themselves up. But like you and Fausto both noted, the economy, they're not going to mess with the economy. You know, they're on the China plan. China has finally seen the light. You know, free economies, free markets work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to say to Shanghai or to Hong Kong, you know, we're nationalizing everything.
Yeah.
You know, this has a life of its own. A free market system, a capitalist system, has a life of its own. So if they want to sing, a story, and if they want to tell you that you know that we're still communists and we're, you know, that's fine. But it's just, I mean, it's all for show.
Yeah, they don't want to end up like the Soviet Union.
That's the big lesson they learned.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Yeah, so they can, you know, I mean, it's like Vladimir Putin, you know, he's talking tough. He's talking this and that and the other. He's going after the oligarchs. But funny thing, he's not touching the economy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not really interfering with this economic engine.
Yeah, but Russia is a whole different kind
right,
of
Russia's
animal.
A different story, and it's a different set of, you know, there's a different set of rules that apply. But ultimately, once people have tasted a free market system, very hard to take it away from them.
Is that what is propelling the Santa Cruz movement in Bolivia? Because that is the prosperous region in the country.
Right.
Yeah, Santa Cruz is like an exception in Bolivia, that you have all these younger people that believe in free market ideas. They really trust private sector about solving problems, and they have a little bit of a culture of you know, philanthropic culture of, you know, giving money, donations to think tanks. And it's really, really interesting how the Evo Morales proposal, you know, of course inspired by Venezuela,
mm-hmm.
gets into this clash, you know, with these younger generations of Bolivians coming from Santa Cruz or other smaller cities, you know. Like Cochabamba, for example, that's another
mm-hmm.
Good example. And they are sort of accepting the proposal of Morales, saying, "Okay, you can be as socialist as you say you want, but do not really mess with our resources, right?"
Right, don't put your hand in my pocket is what they're saying.
Yeah.
Keep your hands out of my pocket. You want to sing, you know, the Internacional, go for it, have a great time, May Day, Maypole, just keep your hands off the bloody economy.
Yeah, exactly. Because basically what Morales was doing was redistributing all the resources coming from these rich regions for the whole country.
Right.
And that's what
getting Chavez into trouble. I mean, no one cares what Chavez says. He's a buffoon. Everybody understands this. Where he's got into trouble was he's nationalizing industries. He's messing with the economy.
Yeah.
And that's where he made his enemies.
And it's math 101. If you spend more than what you can make, you will eventually have a huge problem. Yeah.
Right.
And that is what Santa Cruz is not really ready to face anymore. They say, okay, you can do whatever you want with your money. Or your taxpayers' money, we will have our own money, and we will, you know, spend from there. And this idea of the autonomy, has been there for a while, and it's something that was discussed also with other similar cities in the region, like for example Guayaquil in Ecuador.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, it's important what's going on right there. Because the Ecuadorians from Guayaquil got really excited about what happened in Santa Cruz. And they're sort of putting together something similar, especially now that Correa's support is kind of weak, you know. If you check out media, they are not talking really good about the new constitution. They are not. They are showing, you know, the support figure is really, really low right now in Ecuador, you know, especially after proving that Korea's government was supporting the presence of FARC members in Ecuador and stuff like that.
Right.
Supporting them big time. Well, guys, we only have 1 minute. I want all the listeners to please visit ACER, which is acer.org online, and they have a fantastic weekly roundup of articles on Latin America that you should be reading.
Best on the web.
And,
best on the web, and read it because it... In the long run, it's going to influence us here. So if you want to be kept aware, Hasser is the place to do it.
And I want to thank Aeneas for being such a good guest. And last week we had Eric Svein from Cannes, and he ended up surrounded by girls in bikinis. I'm so sorry you couldn't get girls in bikinis at the last moment, Aeneas, but it was great having you.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
And yeah, I hope everybody.
It's a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you. I hope everybody listens in on Friday. We're going to have Dr. Andrew Boston talking about his new book. And I also hope everybody votes for my blog and the best of blogs. And thank you, Siggy.
You got it. Talk to you later. Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Bye.